We believe with the changes that we made and the new programmatic things that we're going to implement, we have a great future in front of us that will enable us to expand on what we have done in the past, but really help broaden the available pool of talent that helps drive American business.
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story, and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Today, I'm speaking with Alfonso Alexander, President and CEO of the PhD Project. Alfonso, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Now, Alfonso, I had Blaine Ruschak, who was President and CEO of the PhD Project, on the podcast in December 2023.
Right.
And he was amazing. If I have listeners who didn't listen to that podcast interview, tell us about the PhD Project.
Sure. Thanks for having me. And I'm not surprised that Blaine did a great job. I hope I live up to that as well. But PhD Project is an organization that really has significant impact for what we do here in the United States in the space of academics. The PhD Project has been around now for 31 years, and we really work to foster a broader pool of talent that enters into the academic world and then therefore impacts individuals that are entering into business. Our focus has been to go in and identify talent that is in the corporate community or other business related areas and look at and recruit and attract people who have an interest in a second career. And that second career would be in academics. So individuals who are successful as business people that have always said, you know what, at some point I would love to teach and do research. And then those are individuals that we recruit into our organization. Many of them decide to go ahead and pursue academics. And based on that pursuit, they now go through a PhD program. And then upon completion of that program, regardless of what university they participated in or what area they focused on within the business functional areas, then they become faculty members on those campuses and members of the PhD Project. And then their impact is limitless, because they touch so many students in the classroom, as well as their research goes all over the world and helps impact business in a positive way.
Now, Alfonso, when I interviewed Blaine, he talked about how, I guess when the PhD Project was founded 30 plus years ago, there were very few Latino, Hispanic, African-American, and Native American professors. It's 2025. Why do we need the PhD Project today?
So as Blaine pointed out, there was very few at that time. And that number was around 250.
Across the country, right?
Across the country. Across all the universities that have business programs, it was about 250 faculty members with PhDs. Now that number has grown. We processed and realized that there's about 1,800 that have reached that level. Now, some of them are no longer with us. There's about 1,600 that are still active nationwide. So that 1,600 versus the 250 30 years ago when the organization first started. But to answer your question, why is it still necessary? It's because even at the 1,600 number, that still equates to less than 4% of business school faculty members that are PhDs across the country.
Wow. You know, I've had a lot of guests on the show who talk about how representation matters.
Yeah, it truly does. And I'll give you an example. There's empirical data and studies out there that speak to what's called the mentor effect. And it just simply means that when people see other individuals that are in positions that they would aspire to be at some point potentially in their lives, they gravitate towards those individuals and they begin to try and emulate them in their paths. So if you're someone from an underserved area and you've never had a faculty member that was from your hometown, for example, but then you see a faculty member from your hometown that's now a professor at your university and you take a class from that person, then there's this effect that they have that's positive on you that's called a mentor effect. It may be a formalized relationship, it may be informal, but they begin to believe that they can be what they see. So because of that, and with us being an organization that recruits from a broad and diverse pool of talent, then that creates an opportunity for many people, all people who have the aptitude to become PhDs, they get a chance because they have seen people go through the process successfully. The second part of that, which may even be more important, is that there's also empirical data out there that shows that if individuals who have diversity of thought and come from diverse backgrounds are teaching and being involved in research, then everybody's knowledge increases at a greater level than if everyone is the same and has the same background, or even in this example, comes from the same hometown. So that diversity of thought, diversity of perspective, et cetera, is very important for all people to learn more. And that's really what we're focused on, is how we create opportunities for all people to learn and grow together.
Well, Alfonso, I want to circle back to the PhD project in a second, but before we do that, I want to talk about your journey. So how did you get to become president and CEO of the PhD project?
That's a great question. So for 2 years, I was the board chair for the PhD project. So serving on the national board for 5 years and the last 2 years serving as the board chair. Prior to that, I was on the advisory council for the PhD project. So been around the organization directly for about 10 years, grew an affinity for the organization, a passion for what we do, but it wasn't my first experience with the PhD project. I actually was working for another national nonprofit organization called Inroads as an executive when the PhD project started. So I was familiar through the partnership that Inroads and the PhD project had back when it was first started in 1994. And then over the years, followed up with and just watched what the PhD project was doing, but was not directly involved. Always respected the work though. And so when I became a board member, got really engulfed, really engaged with the organization. At the time, I was working with NASFA, National Association of State Boards of Accountancy, as the chief relationship officer, so leading all of the non-operational functions within the organization, as well as serving as the president and CEO of the Center for the Public Trust, which is an ethics and leadership-based organization that was founded by NASFA. And so those two experiences created an opportunity for me to engage with the PhD project because the organizations were supporters of the work of the PhD project. But I would also say that my background really is one that I focused on leadership development, executive leadership, business strategy, and business development throughout the majority of my career, certainly the last 25 years of it. And so the PhD project is one that helps feed talented individuals and significant thought and intellectual horsepower into developing leaders in business, into helping develop strategy for companies, et cetera. So it really just formed, in my mind, a great organization for me to be affiliated with. When Blaine was slated to retire, we knew that we had to find an able replacement. We weren't able to do so initially, but Blaine, to his credit, had given us a runway that said, hey, this is my date, and we'll work toward that date for retirement. And then we got to where we were close enough to that date, but we still didn't have everything aligned the way that we wanted to where we would hire the CEO at that time. So the board asked me, Alfonso, since you do work in this space, and part of what my consultancy has done over the last 6 years is we set up either myself or others to be the interim executive in organizations. And so the board asked me if I would consider taking on the project as the interim president and CEO. So we made that agreement in November. We thought it was going to be about a 6-month period. So that would have been from January until now, essentially, with this being June as we're having this conversation. But then with the things that started happening in our environment as it relates to the type of work that the PhD project has historically done, some of those schedules and timetables were modified. And so now I'm in the role, I will remain in the role until we've identified the appropriate approach to hiring the new person that will replace me, but we don't have a timetable on that at this point. So the short answer to your question is the board asked me to take on this role as an interim CEO until we found the permanent person. And then all of these changes started happening literally the day before I took over, and that's extended our time period.
So Alfonso, you agreed to become president and CEO in November, and you started January 15th. And then January 20th, this firestorm blows through the country. And if I may, I'd like to talk about the Trump administration and their investigation into the universities that actually were working or partnering with the PhD project. So give us a summary of that. And oh my God, talk about a firestorm in your first month as CEO.
Sure, absolutely. And I'll even share something with you that's a little more shocking even. The firestorm actually started on January 14th for us. So the day before I officially took over the role, we had to roll up our sleeves and get to work. And that's because of some activity that was happening in Texas between the governor of Texas and the president of Texas A&M University, who was at that time a partner of ours. So we really started January 14th working on trying to make sure that we did everything that we could to protect the universities that partner with us, our organization, and first and foremost, the faculty members and PhD students that are members of our organization. So to your point, the first week, first 30 days, even the first 90 days were significant for us in terms of all of the things that we had to do to, one, make sure that we were compliant with the new rules that had been placed before the universities that we partner with. And we were able to do that. We got things positioned appropriately within the first 3 or 4 weeks in terms of our organization. But then secondly, to make sure that we protected those relationships that were already there. But I will say to you that that work is still ongoing. We've launched a new strategy in terms of our organization because we have to make sure that we continue to be a thriving organization, as you speak to within your podcast. And there's some things that we had to do because, just to be totally honest with you, some universities have decided to pull out because of the investigations and things that were happening or are happening within the administration. So to just expound on that one last bit, there were 45 universities that were announced to be under investigation by the Department of Education back in March. The things that they were being investigated upon were related to their involvement with us and other diversity-related programs. By the time that happened, we'd already opened up our application and diversity from a race standpoint and a gender standpoint and all of those areas that the administration said could no longer be considered. we'd already removed those from our application. So the investigation came after our work had been done to make sure we're compliant. And thus far, none of the universities that have partnered with us have received any kind of negative backlash from that partnership. So we feel like we've done the right thing, and now we're trying to build and move forward.
So, Alfonso, let me back up and ask you specifically about the changes. So the Trump administration is saying that these DEI programs are illegal. And historically, you've worked to help professionals from underserved communities get their PhD, get their first position, and you've provided support so that they can become successful professors. So what specifically did you change to become compliant?
I'm glad you asked that question, particularly around the support piece. So all we really do with individuals that go through the PhD project is provide them access to information, mentorship support, a community of support where they can establish and build their networks with other PhD students, other PhDs that have already gone through their process, because it's so very important for students who are PhDs to receive mentorship from other PhDs and to have colleagues that are going through the process at the same time for them to be able to really matriculate through that process successfully. Some people confuse our work with thinking that we also provide financial support, but we don't. The support is really from an educational standpoint to help them understand how to navigate through the application process, as well as providing support of a community of like-minded people that have already gone through the process before them. So that's really the level of support that we provide. It is very, very beneficial to individuals that go through the program simply because many of them may be the only PhD student going through the program at their university, or they may be the only student that has a background similar to theirs going through the program at their university. And so therefore, our organization will help match them with other PhDs who have a similar background that have gone through a similar program successfully, and they can establish relationships and support networks with that individual that can be a mentor as well as others. And that's really the magic in what we do. We literally have stories where people have said that that relationship or the relationships that they have within the PhD project have kept them in programs, have saved them from making decisions that would have been detrimental to their careers if they continued to pursue the academy.
So, Alfonso, it sounds like you've changed the application process and the requirements to open it up to anybody at this point.
We have. So now anyone who has the requisite academic credentials, meets those qualifications, and applies, they have an opportunity to come in and participate in our activities. We removed anything related to requirements around any other demographics other than them meeting the qualifications from an academic standpoint and a career background standpoint.
So, Alfonso, now that you've made these changes, what's that done to the organization? How's your pipeline? How's your funding? How's your support? How's your partnerships? Like, what's going on?
The pipeline is still strong. We have a conference every March. It used to be in November, but a couple of years ago, we moved it to March. And this year, we had more individuals to come to that conference than we had the two previous years. Now, the conference itself is made up of individuals who are interested in potentially transitioning from their current career to a PhD program. So that has been really our national event that enables us to introduce people to becoming a PhD. That conference went very well. I've heard great responses, and our feedback from our surveys were phenomenal. And as I mentioned, it was larger in terms of the participants than ones that we've had in the past. We did have fewer universities participate, but I think, again, that's because of the uncertainty in the environment and some of the things that were going on in March. In terms of a go forward for us, what we have realized is that for 31 years, although we've been a successful organization, we've really focused on one major thing. And that one major thing has been to help individuals become PhDs through our support network. We realized that over the years, we've done some add-ons. So we have some programs that help people learn how to be better researchers, some to help them learn how to be better teachers. We have programs that help them understand how to get on the tenure track and move forward in that regard. But we now have decided that although we do have variations of those programs, that still puts us in a place where we have one major program offering, or if you look at it from a business standpoint, one major product. So as we look strategically moving forward, we are developing some new programs that give us some additional product or service offerings that we are bringing to the table that, one, help us take advantage of the relationships that we already have with universities and corporate organizations across the country, but two, help us to position ourselves to diversify our income streams. We are also looking to have a greater presence in terms of social media and how we promote the work that's being done by people who have come through the PhD project and others that partner with us so that we can position ourselves and our organization as a conduit to some of the greatest thought leadership in the world. Because when we look at the roster of people that have come through our organization, that's what we see. Our expectation is that this environment that we're operating in today is and has caused us to slow our trajectory some. But if you look at it like a change management curve, and where you see there's some major change and you have a dip initially, after that dip, you start to slowly climb and then you hit your stride and you have a greater trajectory. We believe with the changes that we made and the new programmatic things that we're going to implement, we have a great future in front of us that will enable us to expand on what we have done in the past, but really help broaden the available pool of talent that helps drive American business.
Alfonso, my coach calls it going slow to go fast. And it sounds like that's what you're doing. I'm curious about something that you just said, which is you're looking to develop new programs that will help you diversify your revenue stream. So give us an example of some of these great ideas. My listeners are going to be really interested. Share a few secrets.
I'll give you just a little bit. I don't want to give you too much because—
Yeah, I understand.
We don't want someone else to beat us to the market. But we're going to be featuring individuals that are globally renowned researchers that are members of the PhD project, that are globally renowned subject matter experts in areas that companies and organizations and research institutes would love to have some partners with. We're going to be featuring them in some new programmatic opportunities. We'll be highlighting them through activities that we'll be doing and helping to broker relationships between them and others that are interested in their work. We're going to be establishing some programs to where we're partnering with some of our members, some of those same individuals and others, to do masterclasses. So that those masterclasses really give professionals who don't want to go and pursue an advanced degree an opportunity to take some of these masterclasses and be able to increase their skill sets in areas of interest for them. So those are just a couple things that I'll share with you that are forthcoming, but we have a list, a pretty significant list of new things that we're going to do.
Alfonso, it sounds like you've got a very exciting and action-packed year ahead of you. You'll have to come back next year if you're still the CEO. We'll have to see. Let me ask you this question. If any one of my listeners is interested in learning more, they might be saying, wow, you know, I never thought about my next, or I've always wanted to get a PhD, how do they get started?
The first thing they could do is go to our website. It's just phdproject.org.
And we'll put a link in the show notes.
Okay, wonderful. They can go there and learn more about our organization, as well as by going to our social media channels. We have a very active LinkedIn page, a Facebook page as well, and an Instagram page that all share information. And we feature some of these phenomenal and multi-talented individuals that have gone through our process on all of those channels, but we also promote activities and programs that we have coming. So those would be the two primary things that I would say they could do at first. Anyone could also reach out to me personally on LinkedIn, Alfonso Alexander. I'm out there and I will engage you and figure out how we can try and best help you. But the key is our organization really turns out significant talent that is some of the best that you've ever seen. And we're just fortunate that we partner with all kinds of organizations across the country that help give us access to that talent. And then we help them figure out if a PhD in business is a great next second career for them. And that's how we do it. And so we do have other individuals that come to us organically, website, social media channels, reaching out to me directly. Any of those could get you to us.
Alfonso, thank you so much for this interview. Have an amazing year.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity to come share, and I wish you the best. I really appreciate your work, and I just encourage you to continue being great.
Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. Please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. Please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends.